The space business is very much a pioneering business. And I think it also speaks to this idea of when Elon Musk says he's going to set out and do something, he's not necessarily going to do it in the crazy forecast that he puts forward, but he almost always does it. And so the space business within SpaceX, I think, is a good example of that, because even right now, what they're designing with Starship, the next generation rocket, which unlocks the future overall for SpaceX and this like huge hefty valuation that they're asking for as they come public, all of that has been said by everybody else to not be possible, and yet they've done it. And now they dominate the market. And so it puts them in a key tentpole position to now be able to go out and carve out other pieces of the market.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of the Master Investor Podcast, where we focus on the SpaceX IPO. By this Friday, the 12th of June, it will be the biggest IPO of all time, set to raise about $80 billion of fresh capital, valuing SpaceX at some $1.8 trillion. To debate the attractions and detractions of this IPO, we are joined by four fantastic guests. My former colleague and friend from CNBC, Morgan Brennan, the host of Morning Call, but also the network's lead anchor when it comes to space. Then, to outline the bull case, we'll be joined by Dan Ives of Wedbush Securities, who you'll know from previous episodes, followed for the bear case by Morningstar's Nicholas Owens. And to round things off, another friend of the show, Larry McDonald of the Bear Traps Report, who'll outline what he thinks this mammoth IPO will mean for the broader markets. All of that coming up. The Master Investor Podcast is sponsored by LSEG, Interactive Brokers, the World Gold Council, and BNY Investments. Please do remember the views expressed in this podcast are for general information purposes only. Nothing in the podcast constitutes a financial promotion, investment advice, or a personal recommendation. More on that in the show notes. First up, we're joined by Morgan Brennan, of course, the anchor of Morning Call on CNBC and the lead reporter on all things space for CNBC. Morgan, it's great to see you.
Well, if the pleasure is all mine, it's wonderful to see you again and keep up all the great work. Just huge congratulations to you and excited to talk about this major moment that, to be honest, I wasn't sure we were going to see in our lifetime.
Well, I mean, quite. Well, firstly, congrats back to you with the new show. It's going so well. And as you say, we didn't know if we'd see it in our lifetime. And I guess we didn't know it would be quite this size. Just talk to us through the core numbers. It's Monday, the 8th of June. By Friday, the 12th of June, this company will be listing. What sort of numbers are we talking about?
Yeah, and we're talking about the largest IPO, initial public offering, in the history of the world, literally. And it's a space company that's doing it. It's a space company that under the hood obviously has a variety of different multi-billion dollar, highly disruptive businesses that all come together to create, I think, in the eyes of SpaceX, a company where the sum is greater than the value of the parts. So in light of that, you're talking about a company that's also losing a lot of money here, but is growing rather quickly and is really sort of basing its valuation, this nearly $1.8 trillion valuation, if everything sort of comes together according to plan here come Friday, $1.8 trillion valuation on a bet on the future, on the long-term future. So 555 million shares priced at $135 a share. That is not expected to change. As of right now, according to some reports, 2x oversubscribed and just a small float. So not a lot of shares being offered to market, but what is being offered to market is expected to raise more than $75 billion. $20 billion of that will go to paying down debt, and the rest is going to go to this massive spend on everything from their next generation Starship rocket to AI compute infrastructure and, of course, data centers in space.
So, as you said, raising $75 billion at a valuation of about $1.8 trillion, so selling about 4.5% of the shares only. What exactly does SpaceX do, Morgan? You alluded to it there. It's not just space. There's three parts of the business as they describe it: space, connectivity, and AI. Talk us through space first of all. What falls under that?
Yeah, so space is actually now, ironically, the smallest business. And this is the business that SpaceX was started upon, right? And it is the launch business. It is the business that has rockets flying to space and then coming back to be reflown again. The Falcon fleet, Falcon 9, Falcon Heavy rockets that are absolutely dominating the launch services market when you talk about bringing satellites and other types of things to orbit and beyond. It's also the piece of the business that is carrying astronauts to the International Space Station and the piece of the business that is working with NASA right now to through the Artemis program to return astronauts to the surface of the moon and build out lunar colonies and then ultimately colonize Mars down the road as well. That is the foundational business of SpaceX. It is the business that everyone said was not possible in terms of this idea of rocket reusability and companies coming in and basically offering launch as a service. It's now the smallest business, but it is the moat for everything else because they have driven down the cost of access to space, not only for other companies in this sort of new commercial space economy, but also for themselves to be able to enable the other business that is really the profit driver for SpaceX right now currently. And that is connectivity, which includes the Starlink broadband constellation that is now taking a chunk out of fiber and terrestrial telecom businesses in terms of how well it's operating and how quickly they're signing on new subscribers.
So, before we get on to connectivity and Starlink, just dwell on space for us. I mean, you've covered this area much more closely than any reporter I know. Is it fair to say they are, under Elon's guidance and innovation, unquestionably the world leader in the space of space?
They're unquestionably the world leader in the space that is space. And you see it in the public markets, too. There's quite a few of these so-called new space companies that are already publicly traded and have stocks in the market. And you've seen this massive re-rating take place in the valuations of the stocks that are currently available on the market, whether it's a Redwire, Planet Labs, or probably the most direct comparable in terms of the launch business, which is Rocket Labs, just massive surge in these stocks. And I think the argument to be had here is that you're seeing that re-rating in those space stocks because many of those companies wouldn't exist if SpaceX hadn't done what it had done over the past 2.5 decades. And so that has enabled this new economy and this new way of doing business in space, if you will. And then, of course, this new attention from investors within the marketplace to understand that that's going to unlock the next generation of growth and you know, the future for humanity, if you will. So the space business is very much a pioneering business. And I think it also speaks to this idea of when Elon Musk says he's going to set out and do something, he's not necessarily going to do it in the crazy forecast that he puts forward, but he almost always does it. And space... Mm-hmm. The space business within SpaceX, I think, is a good example of that, because even right now, what they're designing with Starship, the next generation rocket, which unlocks the future overall for SpaceX and this like huge hefty valuation that they're asking for as they come public, all of that has been said by everybody else to not be possible, and yet they've done it. And now they dominate the market. And so it puts them in a key tentpole position to now be able to go out and carve out other pieces of the market.
And obviously that has enabled connectivity, Starlink.
Yes. So Starlink is really it's the growth driver right now for SpaceX. So you've got revenues that are growing double digits right now. It is the profit engine. It is what's throwing off the free cash flow and that is enabling a lot of, you know, other expenditures that happen around other parts of the broader SpaceX business right now. They've got 10 million plus subscribers. They've got 10,000 plus satellites in orbit. Those numbers are going to keep growing. They have a next generation constellation of satellites that are very high tech, much bigger, much more, I would say, in direct communication with fiber lines and other types of terrestrial connectivity that we're used to seeing when it comes to getting your internet access. And so all of that, the launch business and Starship coming online is going to enable. But in the meantime, it is really the growth engine for SpaceX that then allows them to turn around and reinvest into building out all of this AI infrastructure and compute. Starlink in itself, though, is just a huge business. It's a huge opportunity. It represents another business where people said, this is not going to be possible. You're not going to be able to put broadband constellation into low Earth orbit and have it be economical. Nobody's done it before. Why is SpaceX going to be any different? And then yet here we are. So again, another example of why it tends to not always be the best financial bet to go against Elon Musk, although timing is everything. Forecasts are everything, especially when you're talking about the public markets. But Starlink also, I think, unlocks this the capability and the technology to be able to realize data centers in space as well. So everything sort of fits together, knits together. It's sort of this idea of a vertically integrated, full and complete AI tech stack. Mm-hmm. It starts with the launch and then extends to, you know, Grok and everything else you're going to be able to do with AI over the longer term.
Well, let's touch on that because that's the third part of the business, AI. Obviously, it includes X, AI includes Grok, it includes X. And this is the latest, I guess, addition to the company that was more pure play space initially. It's the smallest part of the revenue as things stand, but the biggest predicted part of the revenue in the future?
Yes, that's right. And so when SpaceX and its 300-page prospectus talks about a $28.5 trillion total addressable market, which is just a monster number in of itself. But when they talk about the vast majority of that number, as they've carved it out for themselves in terms of TAM, is AI. And so that is really where the growth lies for them. And not only terrestrially with, you know, the AI data center build out that we see in all of these companies, including SpaceX, spending many billions of dollars to build out these AI enabled data centers. It's going to be AI data centers in space and sort of this whole idea of being able to do edge computing for space and collect all of that data and do what you need with it in real time, which also then in turn unlocks this idea of, you know, lunar colonization and Mars colonization and just, you know, AI capabilities here on Earth. They all kind of come together and knit together. When you look across those different businesses over the longer term, it is the biggest opportunity for SpaceX. But it's also the one that is burning the most cash right now and has the highest risk attached with it. I think the biggest takeaway here, though, is that from Earth to space, Elon Musk is building out a hardware and software vertically integrated next gen tech opportunity, and he's looking to own every step of the way, every piece of it here. And so if you're going to invest in SpaceX at these levels, which many people argue are lofty valuations, you're betting on that future. And I think Elon Musk and SpaceX would also argue that's why they have the governance structure that they have in place here, which is so harsh, or I guess intense, compared to what we see with other companies as well, because who else but Elon is going to be able to build out a monopoly and be able to do so with humanity's best interests in mind.
And expand on that for me. You're talking about the level of control he'll retain?
Yeah. So obviously dual class structure here. He owns something like, you know, he owns quite a bit of the company. But then in terms of those secondary shares, he owns something like somewhere between 80 and 85% of all the voting rights. He's going to have control of the board. He obviously is chairman. He's CEO. He's also, you know, the chief technology officer for the company, too. And so it's really, it is a company crafted by Elon that is led by Elon and has very little in terms of, you know, governance other than Elon. And mm-hmm. So for better or worse, you have a lot of investors, particularly on the institutional side, that are saying, hey, wait a second, like this is egregious. This, you know, has a lot of room for error. There's a lot of risk attached to this. We've never quite seen anything like this in the marketplace. And oh, by the way, this is a company that's now going to be, you know, added very quickly to something like the NASDAQ 100. And now you're going to have a lot of passive investors and funds that are going to be forced to buy whether they want to or not. Just this idea of conflicts of interest and risks inherent in the governance structure. So that's the critical side of it. I think the other side of it is if you believe the company is Elon and Elon is the company, then that would be the argument around having a governance structure like that.
And just remind us, where do we end up on these passive funds buying them or not? There was thought that perhaps all of them would change their rules, so they'd have to buy the stock much sooner than typical, but that's not quite where we ended up.
Yeah, that's not quite where we ended up. It's really a mixed bag here. So the NASDAQ is actually, you know, moving for faster inclusion here. SpaceX will be the first of what is expected to be a number of examples of these mega cap names that come to market here and, you know, raise oodles of cash and have, you know, huge valuations like we've never seen before in terms of IPOs. So SpaceX, Anthropic, potentially OpenAI before the end of the year, potentially. And so SpaceX will enter the NASDAQ 100 2 weeks after it goes public here. S&P 500 was expected to be, they were considering something similar. Some of the other indexes were considering something similar as well. Ultimately, some of these other ones, most notably S&P, have passed on changing the rules. So it's still 12-month. There has to be profitability, a number of other metrics attached as well. the expectation is, at least in the near term, this is going to push more inflows into those NASDAQ products. And in general, because of the small float, you're going to have a lot of passive investors and funds, et cetera, that are going to be forced to buy shares of SpaceX here. So in the near term, there is the very real possibility, either way, you're going to see volatility in the stock, but there's the very real possibility that you're going to see the stock and the valuation move higher because there's going to be more demand than supply in the market. But we'll see how all of this goes here.
We certainly will. And Morgan, we could not have asked for a better setup than that before we get into the bull bear debates with our other guests. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Wilf. It's great to see you.
This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. Building wealth starts with the right broker, and Interactive Brokers helps you reach your goals with powerful tools, global market access, low costs, and unmatched financial strength. That's why the best informed investors choose IBKR. Learn more at ibkr.com/masterinvestor. This episode is brought to you by LSEG, the leading global financial markets infrastructure, data, and analytics provider. To learn more about how LSEG connects businesses, investors, and markets worldwide, visit LSEG.com. Well, as Morgan outlined for us there, so much of this $1.8 trillion valuation for SpaceX is based on the hope of potential huge growth in the future. If we, though, were to look backwards in terms of the most recent year's numbers, it is an extraordinary multiple to look at. Last year, SpaceX had revenues of $18 billion, and we're talking about a nearly $2 trillion valuation. Very rough calculations puts that on 100 times price to revenue. For context, the S&P 500 is currently trading at 3 times price to revenue, which itself is at the top end of its historical range. The FTSE 100, for context, is at 1.3 times. We're talking about 100 times, admittedly, backward-looking price to sales for this SpaceX valuation. So let's talk about the valuation, and to give the positive take on it, we are joined now by Dan Ives of Wedbush Securities. Dan, it's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's always great to see you, Wilf. And obviously it's a super exciting week, you know, of course, not just with Apple, but with SpaceX. And because I mean, you've talked about, this is the fourth industrial revolution, I'll point it out.
Well, it's really we're really grateful for you making the time. As you said, it's a massive, massive week ahead. Let's get straight into the SpaceX numbers, which I know you're, you know, always a bull on Elon Musk. You have been right to be a bull on Elon Musk many, many times, and you know, he's proven the doubters wrong on a number of things. Touch on us first of all, though, on this total addressable market, the TAM. In the SpaceX S1, $28.5 trillion TAM. Is that believable in your eyes?
I mean, look, I think what they're laying out in the S1, it's essentially like, what's the total market? Look, it's not just about space. It's about data. It's about AI, right? And so, you know, look, and I think when you look at these total addressable markets, I think it just gives you a perspective of, you know, how potentially big they are. And also, like, look, but unique with SpaceX, this is a company that's so well known on the private side for so many years. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're putting in these, you know, sort of market opportunities are something I think many investors have been well aware of for many years.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, it's not just the space stuff, it's data too, because I guess that's kind of the point of my follow-up, which is 26 trillion of the 28.5 trillion total addressable market is in the AI business. But it's interesting that, you know, SpaceX is now much more an AI company based on that metric than it is a space company. And maybe that makes people suddenly pause when you think of the sort of moonshot nature of some of these numbers. They may be more believable if they're all from space than they are from Earth.
Well, look, I think I mean, and me and you've talked about it in terms of like the AI revolution, space is definitely going to be a part of that. I mean, look, how long until we see data centers in space, till we see almost more and more, I'll almost call it a convergence between technology and space. A lot of the execution will come down to data. Because more, if you really start to think about it, it's a data world. I mean, data is the new oil, the new gold. And what they're doing when it comes to SpaceX, you know, they continue to sort of be unparalleled in terms of their opportunity on space. I think investors continue to view it as what's around the corner when it comes to AI and data.
In terms of the AI, pure AI part, is it fair to say that they're at best third at the moment in terms of Grok and X AI versus OpenAI and Anthropic?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think there's any really dispute. Right now, it's a two-horse race. It looks like Anthropic Claude in terms of being first, OpenAI second. Look, that also speaks to why SpaceX did the merger with XAI, and we'll get into it, but it's ultimately why we believe that they'll merge with Tesla as well, because they got to make up ground. Musk needs to make up ground. And the biggest area that they're behind is when it comes to true AI from a model perspective. But what's going to drive that? It's really what drives it is the data. Now, you could argue the Musk-Altman trial, that was just the start of kind of this just general arms race that's going on. But I kind of view it as like this is really Musk creating his own ecosystem, you know, in terms of like no different than what NVIDIA has done or AMD, but it's actually all within, you know, essentially Elon sort of, you know, companies.
And on the pure space part, Dan, are they unquestionably the world leaders?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any dispute. They're world leaders when it comes to space, spatial foundation, satellite technology, obviously everything with Starlink. But Wilb, I think the whole thing is like when you looked at space traditionally, okay, it was really exploration, Virgin Galactic, you know, Blue Origin. But now it's really moving to the enterprise, to data. Now, there have been some Rocket Labs, Quantum Labs, and obviously Voyager. I mean, there's some companies that are in the space. But that's really the new frontier, what essentially they're going after.
And on the idea of data centers in space, which is sort of the perfect merger, I guess, of all of the different parts of the business for SpaceX, and central to the investment case, how realistic a prospect is data centers in space in the next few years?
I mean, I think 2029, 2030, I mean, is sort of, if you want a time frame, something that's, I think, realistic. Now, look, if you look at any of the core data centers that are being built, it's complex enough on Earth, let alone in space. But it's my view, like, over the years, over the decades, like, when it comes to, like, energy, and when it comes to efficiency, and when it comes to possibilities, data center in space, it's not a question of if, it's when. I think that's really the sort of debate.
Dan, let's touch on the Tesla-SpaceX relationship. I mean, clearly there are cross-holdings already. One theory I'd seen was that either SpaceX IPO would go ahead or the two would merge. But you've got a kind of different view. You think the SpaceX IPO goes ahead, and then the two merge either way.
Well, I mean, my view has always been like, okay, XAI, SpaceX goes public. And then over an 80% chance over the next year, by 2027, that SpaceX and Tesla merge. My whole view is, okay, first off, it's a data game. And that would make, I almost would view it as a no-brainer move for Musk to do that. And obviously it depends on price and what they'd ultimately have to acquire Tesla at. Then it comes down to like cross-pollination between Tesla and SpaceX, which has always existed in some form. And this would really be like the golden vision. I mean, I think it's the vision for Musk always to have all of his companies under one hood, as well as also like from an ownership perspective, and Elon talked about this, is that making sure that he has control over AI within his companies that he throws more and more in. And I think this would essentially be what I kind of view as like a watershed move, if that happens.
But do you not worry about those types of moves?
I mean, to some extent, like, look, if you're buying SpaceX, you're buying Musk. I mean, and there's really no different than Tesla. I mean, you're buying into that. Now, does that cause concern in terms of just Musk getting bigger and bigger? Maybe at first there's like concern about owning too much. But I think over time that will settle out.
Dan, you mentioned there the idea that if you're buying the SpaceX IPO, you're buying Elon Musk. And we've been here before. You've been here before, because for all of those years around the Tesla IPO and the immediate years that followed, when there was quite a lot of challenges, you've obviously been someone that's clearly backed Elon Musk always, and you've been right. And people that have listened have had rich rewards because of it. Do you get that feeling of deja vu now, that this is a moment where the pure play people that look at the numbers question the future, and what you've really got to do is back Elon and believe that he will deliver going forward? Or is this time different to the Tesla IPO? Is this time different because SpaceX is so much bigger and this IPO is so enormous?
Look, I think they are different. I mean, you can compare Tesla and SpaceX in terms of different times, different periods. But look, my view is that those investors that ultimately buy in the SpaceX, you're buying into Musk. And then it goes back to like those that bet against Musk with Tesla. I mean, you've talked about so many times over the years, like even though there were moments where it felt like maybe that negative bet was going to work out, that ultimately was the wrong bet, right? For so many bets that bet against Tesla. I think if you look what SpaceX has done, it's clearly proven itself out. They obviously will have to continue to execute significantly, in terms of especially some of the valuations that's being talked about. But I think a lot of it comes down to like, you're either a believer in Musk or you're a skeptic or a bear or whatever it may be. And I think a lot of that does play into the SpaceX deal.
And Dan, what about the size? I mean, look, $75 billion for the investment banks to place on one single day. It's a mammoth task for them. As we sit here, what, 5 days before the IPO takes place, are you confident they'll get it away?
It's a historical moment, right? In terms of just the size of the IPO, the history that would be broken. Then obviously those questions from investors, like when you have deals like this, does it absorb or take away the oxygen out of maybe some other names in tech, right? Like, and I think that also has to play itself out over the coming weeks. But what I would say is that the reception and what demand looks like will be important, not just for SpaceX, but I think the broader market. Because when you have Anthropic and you have OpenAI and you have other deals and you have just, broader sort of obviously a tech rally, I think it's actually important not just for SpaceX, but I think the broader tech and the broader market.
Dan Ives, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us again on the Master Investor podcast, particularly given what a busy week you have ahead and the fact that you are literally about to jump on a flight. Thank you again and safe travels.
No, thank you so much. Thanks.
Hi guys, it's Wilf. I hope you're enjoying this episode. Just a quick reminder to please hit follow or subscribe on your podcast or video app so that you never miss an episode. And if you've got time, please do give us a 5-star rating and leave us a comment. It really helps other people find the podcast too. Now, back to the episode. Let's turn now to Nicholas Owens of Morningstar, who's come out with a valuation of $780 billion for SpaceX, clearly less than half of the value it will be listing at. And I will say it's been incredibly hard to find any big Wall Street firms with such less than positive outlook. So kudos to sticking your neck out, Nicholas. Delighted to have you with us. Thanks for joining the Master Investor podcast. Let's those start with the positives in your research note, which is well worth a read and is, by the way, available publicly. We'll put the link in the show notes. the space business, you think, is unique and has an incredibly strong moat.
That's correct. Thanks for having me on, Wilfred. Our analysis shows that the cost advantage that SpaceX has built, both in the, let's call it, core rocket launch business and extending into the Starlink satellite business, is quite impressive. And just the sheer volume of times they've launched and items that they've launched puts them ahead in terms of the economies of scale that they've been able to achieve, to a degree that I think it's unlikely any private competitor is likely to catch them anytime soon, because the more they keep doing it, that they continue to build a cost advantage.
And in this part of the business, therefore, although it's an expensive business launching things into space, they have a significant cost advantage compared to anybody else.
They do. And I think it's also worth pointing out just how dramatic and kind of amazing what they've achieved is. They haven't just achieved a cost advantage, let's say, for themselves. They've passed this on to the world. That is to say, things you as a satellite provider or a science provider would not even have considered launching into space 10 years ago, now it's affordable. So it literally changes the math about what is even considered viable as a space-based item.
In terms of a sort of positive, but perhaps not as positive, is Starlink. That's generating a lot of cash for them at the moment in a positive way?
It is. It's profitable and has, I think, very promising growth prospects. And given we see it essentially as a telecoms business, and the unit economics when you've got the infrastructure in place, adding a customer comes at very low incremental cost. So that, and you know, which is similarly true for terrestrial telecoms, but there's some interesting features of Starlink that make it also very interesting. I think the key here is their ability to grow the customer base and add revenue at a fast clip is dependent on them adding more satellites. So they're at around 10,000 satellites. They need 15,000, or I think they can get to 15,000 in their current regulatory approvals. And that ultimately getting past that and continuing to launch these does depend also on the Starship, which has a higher launch capacity, being viable and reusable, which we think is highly likely, but not guaranteed, hasn't been proven yet.
So let's move on to the kind of more negative side in your view, and that's then the AI business, which is both a lot more competitive, the likes of OpenAI and Anthropic, to name just two, who most people would see as ahead of them, and is also very expensive, consuming a lot of capital, and doesn't have the same kind of cost advantages as the space business.
That's absolutely right. And I think while it's true that I'm the bear on the street, so to speak, in the name, that's really the result of what I would call mathematics more so than skepticism. So we've actually run several scenarios, some of which exceed the asking price. It really boils down to what you think is most probable in terms of what's going to happen. You're right. So I would say that the moatiness, the competitiveness in AI for SpaceX, I would say it's indeterminate at this time, and it could go either way. They could plow a bunch of money into trying to build out AI data centers, and if it doesn't work, and I assume they would shut it down, that could end up being a huge draw in corporate rate resources, potentially shareholder resources, with no payoff. There's as much possibility that it's wildly successful, that in the long term, we do see a potential case where satellite-based data centers have some incremental cost advantage because they have free solar and free cooling. The name of the game is, if you can get the CapEx and the amortization of the launch cost down, then it can be competitive with terrestrial data center cost-wise, let's say, in the long term. So that's the scenario I think everyone's banking on. And we place a 7%, let's say, cumulative probability on both Starship being reusable and scalable and data centers being highly commercially viable. And that's what results in our lower net fair value.
And obviously, to state the obvious, you know, following what we were discussing with Morgan, you know, the big part of their total addressable market is therefore in the business which you think has the least protective moat in the AI part of the business. In terms of the capital consumption in the years ahead, like, is that what all the money they're raising is going to go towards to this part of the business?
Probably the lion's share. I think the stated uses of capital, they always say stuff like in general corporate purposes, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the big project here is to invest in the equipment and testing that they will need to do to basically put GPUs on some kind of a modified Starlink satellite and prove out let's say its operating system and the test will be whether they can run it doing a bunch of crunching a bunch of tokens and whether they can keep it below 65 degrees Celsius or thereabouts I think we'll know more about that in 2 or 3 years. The trick here is that investors are being asked to decide this Friday whether they think it's going to work, and the engineers will know a little bit later.
Now, obviously, those are the sort of three core parts of the business that we've been touching on. In the S1, there are other sort of moonshots, if you will, or Mars shots, maybe we should call them, which I guess could be successful, but where do you stand on those?
Yeah, there's a long list of these really amazing long-term projects. I would even give this company the benefit of the doubt in saying they're the best position to go after those. And in a way that I think is the long-term strategy here is to build the infrastructure and the supply chain for, call it interstellar or interplanetary at the very least, business, travel, factories on the moon, et cetera. It all sounds far-fetched, but then totally reusable rockets sounded far-fetched 15 years ago. So the point there is when you start looking at the, let's say, the building blocks of the valuation, and then what are you as an investor interested in or willing to pay to participate in those, the mental framework I've been using that I think is useful here is options, right? So, I mean, if you think that SpaceX today is worth, let's say, exactly $135, which is the IPO offering price, and we value that as the sum of the rockets, Starlink, and a potential scenario for AI doing quite well, then you would say all that other stuff, I'm getting it for free. Another way to look at it is if you use our valuations, which is the weighted average, and comes out to $63 a share, you're paying an incremental, whatever that is, with a difference to $135 for, let's say, call options on these other projects. And maybe somewhere in between is the right answer in terms of what of those options are you getting for free and what of those options are you being asked to pay, $40, $50, $60 a share to participate in.
And I guess the sort of moonshot, Mars shot options aren't going to be the critical thing on the valuation, no matter what. The key, is it fair to say, reason why your price target is half or slightly below half of the $135 price target is what your kind of ascribed execution risk to that AI part of the business. That's the single biggest reason there's a gap, is it?
Yeah. So fundamentally, we take a discounted cash flow view at Morningstar. We really tend towards bottoms-up valuation. We're not using a multiple or anything like that. So what happens is we modeled out three scenarios for the AI business. Essentially, we think that the Starlink and the rockets business is pretty solid, and those consistently come out at about a $611 billion enterprise value. So then there's a negative scenario where data centers in space don't work, and so they spend some money to find out and shut it down. So that's a few dollars drag in one scenario, which we ascribe 43% likelihood. Then the what we call most minimum viable product or the base case scenario is where data centers in space work. They're commercially viable, but they're not highly competitive to terrestrial. So there's sort of some cost parity or cost and there's some capacity constraints. And so we value that at 50% probability. And then there's this, what we called moonshot, but what you simply might call the upside scenario, where data centers in space are both viable and commercially competitive with terrestrial, and they end up getting sort of more share of the global compute capacity and rent it out and so forth. Again, we modeled it as an infrastructure play. This is really less so about Grok or self-driving cars or what have you. It's really about the market value of the scarce resource, which is these gigawatt capacity data processing centers.
And in that moonshot scenario, what valuation do you get to?
Well, that gets you to $154. And so if you believe that, is, call it 100% true, that it's all going to happen, then you're getting the Mars shots for free. Frankly, I don't doubt that there's a decent contingent of investors who believe exactly those things. And that's exciting.
So that's the forward-looking kind of route to justify the valuation. Just dwell for us on the backward-looking point. Where has the valuation come from in the last year or two when it was, you know, just not insiders per se, but core early investors funding this company compared to now broadening out to everybody?
They've priced the deal such that it has an implied market valuation or enterprise value of close to $1.8 trillion. Just a year ago, in July of 25, the private market valuation of the Rockets and Starlink business was $400 billion. And in February, a deal was done where the SpaceX, the company, bought the XAI business from Elon Musk, which is now the AI division of SpaceX. And that came at about a $250 billion valuation. And so I think it's worth noting that within the last year, the sum there, if you look at it as sort of a time-shifted sum of the parts, is some 600-something billion. What we're being asked to believe, is that things have radically changed because of the combination of these things, and also arguably that the influx of $75 to $83 billion from public investors will enable, the massive investment and the development of AI. So I just think it's important for investors to sort of, go in eyes open about what those scenarios are and what they might be worth.
I agree. And that is why, Nicholas, we've had you on to this special episode of the Master Investor Podcast focused on the SpaceX IPO. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of the Master Investor Podcast with Wilfred Frost is sponsored by BNY Investments, a trusted partner for many, delivering financial solutions to investors and institutions worldwide. This sponsorship does not constitute financial advice. This episode is sponsored by the World Gold Council, the global experts on gold. They champion gold as a trusted strategic asset, providing market-leading research to help investors understand gold's role and modernize how gold is owned, traded, and used, developing industry standards and market infrastructure. Learn more at goldhub.com. Well, we turn now to Larry McDonald, a good friend of the Master Investor Podcast, the founder of the Bear Traps Report and author of How to Listen When Markets Speak. Larry, it's great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Wolf. Thanks for having me.
So I have to say, it was great to have Nicholas on and of Morningstar, of course. It was so hard to find a big Wall Street company with a bearish rating on this IPO. What does that tell you?
Well, when you get an IPO this size, the bankers always remember, always remember about the Wall Street silos. And so the bankers that are doing the deal, they really have to kiss the ring in this period before the IPO. They have to come up with the most Pollyannish possible assumptions to appease the king, which is Elon, and to get they've got the business. So there's the conflicts of interest are just off the charts.
And what do you think about the valuation? I mean, obviously, projections going forward, the sky quite literally is the limit or not the limit. If we look backwards, you're talking about an astronomical price to sales ratio, but way more even than being talked about for Anthropic and OpenAI.
Right. And you're talking about a valuation of $30 billion in 2019. $30 billion 2019 to now $1.8 trillion. You're talking about 6% of the United States GDP, Facebook came public, which was the hottest IPO of that decade from 2010 to 2020, at less than 1% of GDP. You keep companies private for so long, by the time they come public, they're, you know, massively matured, and it's very difficult for passive investors. We talk about this in our book, the dark side of passive investing. In other words, we're destroying the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ because over time, what we're doing is we're putting companies in later and later and later at higher and higher valuations. And we're all investors are going to pay the price over the next, 10 years, unfortunately.
When we say 1.8 trillion, which is the projected market cap, as you say, relative to GDP, 6% of GDP, it's off the charts, comfortably the biggest. It's going to make it the seventh or so biggest company in the world at the point of pricing it. Do you think that they've got a job on their hands in the next few days to fill this? I mean, it's not a simple task to find 75 or 80 billion, which is what they're trying to raise at this valuation.
Right. And the funny thing is for Google to front run them with that 80 billion plus a mandatory convert, I never thought I'd ever see, ever, Google issue a mandatory convertible, which is a classic warning sign because it's a very aggressive way to raise capital by dumping all that stock. And so they're already being front run. I think there's a decent chance Meta tries to front run them. But remember one thing. The cash burn of the Mag 7 plus Oracle in recent years is astronomical relative to the previous 10. In other words, these were cash cows. And companies like Meta are going from 80 billion of free cash flow to almost negative, or Oracle going from 50 billion of cash flow to negative 20, free cash flow to negative 20. So the bottom line point that I'm trying to make, and this is so important, Wolf, if you believe the assumptions from Morgan Stanley, Goldman, and the bankers, the only way SpaceX achieves that growth is really continuing to decimate the free cash flow of Mag 7 plus Oracle. In other words, they're the ones, think of like a railroad system to space. That's one of the big growth areas where they're going to put data centers in space over the next 5 to 7 years. That's like a rail system. So SpaceX is the railroad, and they're going to build a supply chain up to space, very profitable. Guess who has to pay for that? Mag 7 plus Oracle. So at the ultimate bottom line end of the day, Americans' 401ks are already 45, 50% tech. And now we're taking this monstrosity and dumping it into the NASDAQ and the S&P over the next year. And it just sets up where whenever in my career, and we talk about this in my first book, A Colossal Failure of Common Sense about Lehman, in 2007, the financials got up near 24% of the S&P 500 across all the different verticals. And now we're at 50% of the S&P 500's composition in tech and AI. And it's just, it's malpractice, really. I mean, somebody has to make a statement here, because it's just not fair to America's 401k system.
I mean, when we think about the impact on the broader markets as a whole, Larry, on Friday, we saw the NASDAQ sell off by 4%. Obviously, as you've already alluded to last week, there was a significant tech-related capital raise in that issuance by Google. Do you think those two things are directly linked? And do you think that any buyer of SpaceX on Friday will be selling some kind of comparable tech-related stock to buy it? Or is there money sitting on the sidelines ready to come in that can easily absorb the deal of this size?
Well, everyone says, the stats, there's about $8 trillion in money market funds, but a lot of that is corporate. So that's your Apples, a lot of that capital is corporate capital. And so the actual capital on sidelines relative to this is not enough. And so if you look back last 30, 40, 50 years, AOL, Time Warner, RJR, Nabisco, TXU. These were big kind of private equity deals that created a turn in the market. And right now we have some big private equity deals. We have big public IPOs. It's a colossal sucking sound of liquidity out of the market because there's only so much capital in the bond market and in the stock market. And when you have this kind of aggression of dumping of shares at very high valuations, the probability that this creates, kind of a crash, not at 87, but a serious like hit to the market is very high, very high. In all cycles, there is a peak moment of hubris. And that's what we saw in 2008. CFOs, Chuck Prince, I'm going to stay on the dance floor until I have to stop dancing. And literally he said those words while his bank was crashing.
So as we wrap up, Larry, it's Monday, the 8th of June. This biggest IPO of all time is on Friday. I'm putting you on the spot here. Do you think they get it away successfully in the short term? And what do you think happens in the weeks that follow?
Well, just look at Jensen and Trump over the weekend. Trump is panicking because he really adores Elon Musk, right? And Jensen adores Elon. So they're both out over the weekend trying to pump up the market. Trump's promising to buy stakes in these AI companies. I mean, this is just, they're going to get this done, but they're nervous. And then the other ones coming, the OpenAI and Anthropic, are going to be in some trouble because a big fat guy just sat down at the dinner table and the buffet is going to get a lot smaller and it's going to get harder and harder to sell for more AI equities.
Really interesting, Larry. And I really appreciate your honest take on this. It's a massive IPO and people should make sure they do all of the work and are aware of all of the unbelievably stretched valuations. But if you're a believer in Elon Musk, he's succeeded before. Larry McDonald, as ever, a pleasure.
I'll just say my only advice would be rotate out of the S&P 500 into the S&P 500 equal weight or more globally diversified equity portfolio that's not as exposed to 50% technology. Mm-hmm. Thank you, my friend.
No, thank you, Larry. Always a pleasure. And as we've discussed on two great episodes with Larry, make sure to check out his latest book, How to Listen When Markets Speak, which has a new section in it for these current markets. Well worth checking out those episodes with Larry as well. Well, that does it for this special episode on the SpaceX IPO. I hope you've enjoyed it. Do leave us a comment and let us know if you want to have more of these short-term reactive episodes on topics as opposed to just on the brilliant guests that we've been able to attract. And if you haven't hit subscribe or follow yet on your podcast app, please do so. Our next episode is with my dear friend, the best business broadcaster in the business, Becky Quick of CNBC. That's next week on the Master Investor Podcast. The Master Investor Podcast is sponsored by LSEG, Interactive Brokers, the World Gold Council, and BNY Investments. Please do remember the views expressed in this podcast are for general information purposes only. Nothing in the podcast constitutes a financial promotion, investment advice, or a personal recommendation. More on that in the show notes. This podcast is produced by Paradigm Productions and Master Investor Limited in association with Birdline Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe on YouTube or click follow on your podcast platform, and you'll be automatically notified each time a new episode drops.